It's really appropriate to talk about this, but recently some of you may have went out and seen the movie First Man, and it's a story, I think Ryan Gosling is the main actor, of the first man on the moon, Neil Armstrong. And it's very appropriate in a place like the Challenger Learning Center to talk about the first man on the moon, because it's quite an anything's possible kind of story. JFK announced in 1961 about his hope and his essentially declaration before Congress that he wanted to put a man on the moon and return them safely by the end of the decade. And at the time when JFK made that announcement, it was pretty ridiculous for a few reasons. Number one, it was ridiculous because the technology didn't exist. This was an impossible task if ever there was one. It was so impossible that, in fact, some of you probably remember at some point in your life, you had a parent or a relative or someone who would say, they can put a man on the moon, but they can't. And then they'd list some ridiculous problem that they were struggling with or having with something around the house, because that was how putting a man on the moon was seen. It was this impossible pinnacle of achievement kind of task that we could only dare dream of. And the second reason it was kind of ridiculous was because just a month previous to JFK's announcement, the USSR, our Cold War rival, had already accomplished something that put them way ahead in the space race. About a month or so beforehand, Yuri Gagarin became the first man in orbit in outer space. He was the first Russian cosmonaut. And surely, if you're handicapping the race and deciding who's going to win this thing, your answer would not be America. Your answer would be the USSR, because they had apparently already taken a step ahead and gotten ahead in the space race. But of course, we know over the course of the rest of the decade, as scientists and physicists and all these people from NASA and all the appropriate agencies worked hard, worked together, eventually one day, Neil Armstrong would step out of a spacecraft and onto the surface of the moon, and he would utter those very famous words, "To infinity and beyond." No, of course not. He would say, "This is one small step for man, but it is one giant leap for mankind." And in one moment, we were reminded of the fact that anything is possible. We're getting ready as a church to engage in this anything's possible kind of faith in God. In about half an hour, in this very space, in this very room, we're going to make commitments to our next chapter initiative to be a part of basically saying, God, we believe anything's possible with you, and we are ready to take a big, bold next step as a church to be a part of trying to make a difference in this world. And it's my hope that for you, like me and my family this week, that commitment you're getting ready to make is one that feels kind of scary to you, and one that feels kind of big to you, and one that feels like, God, if you don't show up, I don't know what's really going to happen. Like, I'm going to be in trouble. As a church, collectively, we're getting ready to take a step into a new community. We're getting ready to take a step to engage with our mission in a new way in this world. We're getting a chance to step into some serious pockets of brokenness and trying to write a better story for our city and for our world as we follow Jesus. But that's a narrative that requires us to believe that with God, anything is possible. Now, I don't know about you, but this week I had an experience that reminds me about the key tension here. Because the tension is, I think all of us to some degree believe we have an anything's possible kind of God, but yet that oftentimes comes into conflict with the impossible circumstances or frustrating experiences that we all have. This week in our community group, I have a friend who shared about their experience as a kid being diagnosed with a lifelong disease that would affect them. And it was a disease that wasn't, you know, something that was life-threatening, but was definitely something that would affect them for the rest of their life. It would make life difficult. It would kind of be just kind of a weird thing that they would have to put up that would definitely be at least an inconvenience to them. And my friend shared our community group about their experience with people in her church and in her orbit as a little kid, you know, not even 10 years old yet, telling them, hey, just pray more. Hey, you need to have more faith, all those kind of things, which, you know, side note, in addition to not being helpful, is also not biblically accurate. So maybe we should hold off on that kind of advice. And I really appreciate my friend sharing this because they shared about their experience of wondering, God, if you can do anything, why won't you help me? And why won't you heal me? And why is this my current experience? And why is this what I'm going through? And judging from the looks around the table, I don't think my friend was the only person who had experienced something like that in their lives. In fact, I think we've all probably experienced that in our lives. There's a big tension between this anything's possible God we serve and life in a broken world that we all face. And that's what I want to talk about today. Today we're going to look at a story from the Gospel of Mark. The Gospel of Mark is a first century document that outlines the life and the teaching and the ministry of Jesus. And the Gospel of Mark is really interesting in that Mark, we believe, was actually the cousin of a guy named Peter. And you might recognize Peter because he was a first century follower of Jesus. He's part of Jesus' inner circle, actually. And if you're Catholic, you actually believe Peter was the first pope. So you had that going for him. One of the things that's interesting about Peter, though, is he probably couldn't read or write. And so we believe that we have this first century account of Jesus' life because one day Peter pulled his cousin Mark aside and said, hey, Mark, I just want to tell you about all the stuff that Jesus said and did, and I want you to record it and write it down for me, and voila, that's how we get the Gospel of Mark. And in this first century document, we get a lot of information about who Jesus is, what he did, but specifically, we get this really amazing story that I want to share with us today that I feel like addresses this very tension of following a God who says that anything is possible while simultaneously trying to navigate through the fact that our life experiences don't always seem to match up with that very well. And so in Mark chapter 9, if you have a Bible, you can turn there. Here's how the story begins. When they is Jesus and a couple of his disciples, they had this kind of mountaintop experience where they'd retreated away from the others, and so they're coming back down. When they came to the other disciples, they saw a large crowd around them and the teachers of the law arguing with them. As soon as all the people saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed with wonder and ran to greet him. What are you arguing with them about? He asked. A man in the crowd answered, Teacher, I brought you my son, who is possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him to the ground. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they could not. And then Jesus says something that seems very un-Jesus-y to me. He says, You unbelieving generation, Jesus replied, How long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy to me. And again, this just seems really weird. As a pastor for about 10 years, I've had people ask me to pray for a lot of stuff happening in their lives. I have never responded to that request with, you wicked, unbelieving generation. That seems like kind of a weird way to respond, which I think, in fact, should actually draw us in to try and notice what Jesus is saying here. And what Jesus is observing here is he's putting his finger on the real problem here. And the real problem isn't a medical problem, and the real problem is actually a faith problem. And Jesus, because he has his, you know, X-ray Jesus spiritual vision, he can understand the human heart better than any of us can. Jesus notes the real problem here is actually a lack of faith in the power of what God can and will do. And what Jesus points out here is to no one in particular, yet everyone surrounding him in this moment, there are a lot more forms of unbelief than what initially meet the eye. You see, when I think about unbelief, I don't know about you, but the image I sometimes get in my head is this image of like some disaffected mid-20s, you know, college graduate, and they're sitting at the desk somewhere in their house, and they're banging away on the keyboard, or they're looking on a screen at some Reddit thread, and you know, just kind of looking at all their stuff about why God doesn't exist in this world, and maybe they have like a Sam Harris or a Richard Dawkins book on their desk, and you know, like they're just kind of like mad about God, and they're just, you know, hey, I think this stuff is a load of crap. I'm not interested. Don't talk to me about Jesus. I think religion is a problem in the world. And hey, there are certainly people in our world that match that description. And in this story, we have someone that in a different way matches that description, the teachers of the law. If you read Mark's gospel, what you discover is the teachers of the law at this point have basically made it clear, Jesus, we're not interested in learning about you. We've already pre-decided what we think about you, and we're just going to make whatever narrative exists fit my preconceived notions about you and about who you are. And certainly that's a form of unbelief. But what's more challenging is the fact that oftentimes unbelief looks a lot different, and frankly, in this room, if you're a follower of Jesus, a lot closer to home than you might think. Sometimes unbelief looks like arrogance. The disciples in the story we're going to see at the end, their problem is they thought that they would be able to cast this spirit out of this guy's son without asking for God's help. That is the ultimate in arrogance. And arrogance is simply an attitude that says, I can do it myself. God, I don't need your help. And our ego edges God out of our lives. Sometimes unbelief looks like disappointment. Discouragement. It looks like the dad in this story, who has no doubt spent his entire life on doctors and trying to find help for his son, and he doesn't understand why God isn't coming through with the results that he feels like and wishes that he would. And so out of shame, out of embarrassment, out of frustration, what does he do? Well, he does what a lot of us do, right? He walks away, turns his back. He allows that discouragement to become a wedge in his relationship with God. The crowd here symbolizes a third version of unbelief that we can often notice, and it's what I'll just call on-demand God. And on-demand God suffers from this notion that we create a box around God and around who God is and around the kind of stuff God does and the kind of people God likes and the kind of people God doesn't like and what he does to the people that he doesn't like. And strangely enough, those boxes often tend to align pretty closely with the people I like and the people I don't like. And the crowd, not just in Mark's gospel, but in all of the gospel accounts, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the crowd symbolizes this on-demand God all the time. Frequently, we see they come to Jesus, and they expect Jesus to do all these God kind of things, to heal the sick, you know, to have a really cool, you know, snappy sermon that's really entertaining and makes me laugh and makes me think. But the moment Jesus, we see in the Gospels, actually like challenges people, and the minute Jesus stands up against the kingdoms of this world or against people's preconceived notions about how the Son of God should do his ministry and should work, the crowds walk away. Because the minute that on-demand God doesn't meet my demands, I lose interest. And here's all I want you to notice about all those forms of unbelief is that in each and every way, they lead to me walking away from Jesus. And so Jesus calls this boy over to him. He's brought to him. And Jesus has this moment alone with the father and this boy, and we're told, Mark 9:21, Jesus asked the boy's father, how long has he been like this? From childhood, he answered. It has often thrown him into fire or into water to kill him, but if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. And Jesus responds, again, very indignantly, very surprisingly, if you can, said Jesus. He probably did a Z-snap right there. Everything is possible for the one who believes. Jesus, I imagine, in this moment responds in the same way. I don't know if you've ever had this experience or not, where someone asks you a question, and the mere fact that they ask you that question is so offensive to you. Parents, have you ever had the experience of your probably teenage son or daughter saying, Mom, do you even love me? You know, Dad, do you even care about me? And just, you know, maybe they catch you at the wrong time or something. And just the fact that they would ask that question of you is so offensive to you. You know, Mom, you're like, yeah, I had 40 hours of loving you when I brought you into this world, right? Like, how dare you ask me such an insensitive or offensive kind of question? I imagine that's what Jesus is sort of feeling right here as he talks to this dad. Because Jesus is, what is core to Jesus' identity is the fact that anything is possible when Jesus is involved. Anything is possible. And the moment we lose sight of that, the moment we doubt that, the moment that we just allow our present circumstances to push out this core idea of who Jesus is, Jesus isn't just like wanting to correct us on that. Jesus is downright offended by that notion. We can understand the dad's hurt, right? His whole life. You know, we kind of know from this passage that his son is probably a young man at this point, you know, in his 20s or something like that. And if he's been affected since childhood, he's, you know, this dad's probably had nearly 20 years of taking this kid to specialist after specialist and researching the internet for online cure after online cure and homeopathic remedy. And he's tried apple cider vinegar and he's done essential oils and all this stuff that you would do to try and make his kid better. And none of it has worked. And I imagine this dad steps in to bring his son to Jesus because he heard there was some like magic healing rabbi, teacher, pastor kind of guy going through town. And, you know, it, just out of desperation, if nothing else, he kind of thought, well, I don't have anything better to do on a Tuesday afternoon, so I might as well come and I might as well show up. And, you know, hey, if nothing changes, it's not like anything's different anyway. You know, what other options do I have? And he lets out in that one little word, if, which Jesus immediately seizes on to remind him and to remind us, when I'm involved, anything can happen. And I think immediately sensing the power of who Jesus is, I imagine this father falls to his knees and he says what is one of my favorite verses in the whole Bible. The boy's father exclaimed, I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief. And I don't know if there's a more accurate statement that I resonate with in the Bible as this authentic picture of faith than that one. When I was a teenager, I went through this phase, a season in my life, where I don't really know how to explain it. I call it my dark night of the soul. It sounds very existential or something like that. But basically, I just kind of woke up one day, and all of a sudden, I just realized, like, what if I only believe in Christianity because that's what my parents believe in, and because a lot of my friends are Christians, and because we go to church all the time, and that kind of thing? Like if I was born in Morocco, would I be a Muslim? Or if I was born in Japan, would I be a Buddhist? Or if I was born in, you know, like in India, would I be a Hindu? Like, what's the deal with this Christianity thing? And it wasn't so much like quit believing in Christianity as all of a sudden I became aware of like, oh, wow, like this thing I placed my whole hope and whole life in, like there are billions of people around the world who totally disagree with me and who are probably just as convinced that their faith system is the right one, you know, and they can't all be right. And so it led to this kind of year or so of doubting and journeying and questioning and trying to figure all this stuff out. And what made that season so painful and so difficult as a teenager, I think, wasn't so much the questions I had, though those were kind of big and scary and imposing. What made that season so difficult and scary for me was the fact that all the Christians around me seemed so overly certain about everything. And it was basically this, like, well, yeah, of course Christianity is true. And of course Jesus is the Son of God. How can you think otherwise? And it was just like they just didn't get it, maybe. Or maybe I was the one that just didn't get it. And they seemed to have this certitude about everything that I couldn't seem to muster up inside of myself. And this verse gave me a lot of hope in that season and still does give me a lot of hope in this season, because what it reminds me is that anything's possible kind of faith isn't this like amazing, you know, like just against all odds, I believe, I'm a true believer, nothing shakes this kind of faith. Anything's possible kind of faith is a conviction to keep showing up instead of walking out. Anything's possible kind of faith is the faith that this dad shows when he says, Jesus, I don't know how this is going to turn out. And Jesus, if I'm being really honest, I'm not getting my hopes up. But Jesus, I have just enough faith in you that I'm willing to keep showing up even when I'm not sure I'm going to get the result I want. And it's the kind of faith that Jesus rewards. A story with this boy and his father finish by Mark saying that when Jesus saw a crowd was running to the scene, he rebuked the impure spirit. "You deaf and mute spirit," he said, "I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." A spirit shrieked, convulsed him violently, and came out. The boy looked so much like a corpse that many said, "He's dead," which, just side note, should be a lesson to us that when Jesus gets involved, it doesn't always look like things are going to get better from the outset. But Jesus took him by the hand, lifted him to his feet, and he stood up. The boy was healed. Prayers were answered. And from this, I just want us to draw two quick lessons here. Lesson number one is that anything's possible when we show up instead of giving up. Don't allow your doubt. Don't allow your discouragement. Don't allow your demands about how God should work in this world. Don't allow your just plain old, I'm stuck in unbelief. Don't allow your arrogance. We'll talk about that in a second. Get in the way of you and God. Anything's possible faith looks at those obstacles, and it looks at just those very typical, understandable forms of unbelief that we all face. And it has this conviction that says, God, I'm just going to keep showing up. God, I'm still going to be here. Here's the truth, guys. I wish I had a better explanation for that tension between the anything's possible God and the disappointing results that I oftentimes experience. And lest you think that I am some altruistic individual that wants to help others, no. That is entirely selfish. Because I wish I had that for my own life. And I wish I could tell you why, after all kinds of prayers from all kinds of different people, I wish that God would respond a lot more quickly to my prayers for my wife not to wake up every morning battling chronic pain, battling migraines, and all the stuff that she goes through. And I wish that despite my constant prayers, that all the heart and soul and energy and work and effort that I pour into Crossbridge, man, I wish I could look around this room and go, man, look at this really successful, stuff that's always going on. Look at all the people coming, and all that kind of stuff. And I wish that after prayers and prayers and prayers and hard work and effort and energy and blood, sweat, and tears over 5 or 6 years, that the church I led in Chicago didn't have to close down. And I wish that when people I love who are walking through custody battles, who are walking through divorce, who are walking through cancer, who are walking through Alzheimer's, I wish that God was more responding in very physical and tangible ways to my prayers for those people than I feel like he often is. But this is where this gets so huge. In addition to all those wishes, my life is undergirded by this fundamental belief that I really actually do think that Jesus Christ physically rose from the dead. And that he really is the Son of God that he claimed to be. And if those two facts are true, what that tells me is I think it's very possible Jesus knows what he's doing, and I may not always understand or know what he's up to. Because just as real as my wish and want and hope about why I don't get the answers to prayer and stuff that I always want is also the fact that I've learned over the course of my life, and I would, just very humbly postulate in your life as well, that I'm a pretty weak person. And left to my own devices, I don't have the power to change much of anything. And left to my own devices, I often find myself wandering down the wrong paths at the wrong time with the wrong people in the wrong way. And I just have this way of, on my own, messing my life up. And at the end of the day, I don't know what's going to happen with Jesus, but I know what will happen without him. And the answer is nothing good. And so if that's the truth, why would I walk away? Why am I stepping away? Why am I allowing my current doubt or discouragement or whatever it is get in the way of what I know to be true about Jesus, that he has died a death on the cross for my and your sin, that he is risen from the dead, that he is the Son of God, and that he might be up to something behind the scenes, even when I can't detect or quite experience it yet. And so that leads me to the second little lesson we learn here. Is that anything's possible when we rely on God's power instead of our own? The story that we just read actually doesn't end with this dad and son, you know, experiencing healing. It actually ends with Jesus and his disciples. Mark tells us that after Jesus had gone indoors, his disciples asked him privately, "Why couldn't we drive it out?" And Jesus' response was, "This kind can only come out by prayer." Don't miss what is implicit in these verses. Why couldn't we cast out this demon? Jesus' answer is, because you didn't pray about it, which seems like dumb with a capital D, okay? I don't know how to exorcise a demon. My only experience is watching like the first 5 minutes of those kind of movies, and at that point, I just have to look away because they're too scary and too intense for me. But even I know that it seems like step one of doing something like this would be asking God for help, would be praying about it. And the disciples thought, "Nah, man, we got this. We don't need your help." It'd be as dumb as if, you know, you're trying to improve your jump shot and Steph Curry, you know, says, "Hey, would you like some help?" And I say, "Nah, man, I'm good." You know, like, how stupid is that? How arrogant is that? How foolish is that? And we like to laugh at the disciples, and we think, oh, silly disciples, tricks are for kids, and we just kind of make them the butt of our jokes. But come on, we do the same thing, we just do it in the opposite way. Instead of being like the disciples, where we attempt bold and big things without God, we oftentimes just assume God's not going to get involved, and so we just back away from the bold and big thing that we should do. It's not very honoring to God when I try to do something, you know, big that he hasn't asked me to do. You know, when I put him to the test, when I put him on the line for something that God's like, "Whoa, I didn't actually agree to this, man." But when God asks us to do something big, too often my response is I just back away because I assume that it's not going to happen. And the reason I do that is because I think it all relies and rests on my power. Restated another way, maybe we should think about that principle this way, is that discovering anything's possible with God means we have to attempt things that are only possible with God. I'm not going to find an anything's possible God when I live exclusively in the realm of what's possible with me. And therein lies the challenge. Therein lies faith. Because faith will act on this conviction that says, "God, I believe anything's possible. So I'm willing to attempt with you and your help and your leadership and you taking the reins what is only possible with you." We've approached a time to get ready to receive commitments. And I hope that as we do this, we take next steps of faith that are defined by a belief in an anything's possible kind of God. An anything's kind of possible God who I think wants to use this small church to help disconnected people in our city connect to him. Who wants to use everyday, average, ordinary, broken people with problems and issues and, you know, normal-sized bank accounts and normal-sized aptitude and ability. that if anything's possible with God, that God really can use our church to be a catalytic transforming force in our city that helps people know there is a God in heaven who loves them, that helps people in a hurting community to have a champion, to have people who love on them and care about them, to be a force to repair hurting and broken relationships, marriages in our city. They get a chance to rewrite a narrative on racial brokenness and reconciliation. And also that as we get ready to be a part of that vision, that we personally, we actually believe anything's possible, not just for our church, but with us. And as we volunteer our resources and our time and our effort and our energies, that we do so believing not just that God will write an amazing story in and through our church as we follow him, but we do so believing that God is going to reward that kind of faith that seeks him. I had my little mental breakdown this week about, you know, oh my gosh, what are we getting ready to do? You know, we got this big weekend coming up and, you know, and like, guys, honestly, as we make this move, I have no idea what's going to happen, right? We could make a move in this Oak Ridge community and see it be the most successful, amazing thing ever. We could see it be like, oh, wow, that was a terrible idea, right? We could see it be much the same. The fact is, I don't know, and you don't know. None of us know. But what I do know is, I believe this is the place that Jesus is calling us to go. And that our responsibility as followers of him is not to control the results. Our responsibility of him to him is to do just that, is to follow and leave those results up to him. Jesus, a little reminder for us buried in this text is Mark 9:23. Everything is possible for one who believes. Let's write the next chapter that demonstrates that we're buying what Jesus is selling in that statement. Father in heaven, as we get ready to take these next steps of bold faith and trust in you, God, I pray that you'd reward, that you'd be faithful, that you grant your blessing and place your hand on our church as we do our best to be faithful to you as we get ready to move into a new community. And God, I pray you would open doors in this school, in our community, with our neighbors, God, to get a chance to point them toward you, the God in heaven who loves them. Use us to restore brokenness spiritually and physically in this world. But God, simultaneously, as we get ready to make commitments together as a church, grant us wisdom and faith to make commitments that honor you and that display our confidence in you as an anything's possible God. We pray this in Jesus' powerful name. Amen. Thank you for listening to the final Next Chapter message online or via our podcast. If you would like to make a Next Chapter commitment, please head online to crossbridgechristian.com/give and click on the link at the bottom to make a Next Chapter commitment. Thanks for listening, and thank you for being a part of writing the next chapter with us.